Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools, the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Welcome to another discussion on science and the Bible, brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. This is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research. Today, our topic of discussion will be Noah's Flood. Perhaps we could call it, What on Earth Happened? Or maybe better yet, What All Over the Earth Happened? One of the first questions that people often ask is, gee, where did all that water come from? And where did it all go? Well, actually, that's one of the easiest questions to answer. Just look at a globe once. You will notice that about 70% of the Earth is water. In fact, if the Earth were relatively flat, the depth of the water around the entire Earth would be about a mile and a half. That is a lot of water. Wow. Okay, so all of the water for the flood is right here and always has been. So let's look at some scriptures here. Genesis 7, verse 12 says, And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. 17 through 20, And the flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased and bare up the ark, and it was lift up above the earth. And the waters prevailed and were increased greatly upon the earth. And the ark went upon the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth. And all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. So the entire earth was covered. To what extent? Verse 20, 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. Well, some people like to say that, that's impossible. They didn't have the technology back then. Folks, go back to Genesis chapter 4. Jubal was the father of such as, he was an artisan of harp and organ. Zillah, she bare Tubal-Cain. He was the instructor for brass and iron, so much for the brass age and or bronze age and iron age. Genesis chapter 4. Also in Genesis chapter 4, Cain, Noah's wife, she conceived and bare Enoch, who builded a city. Folks, the people back then, well before the flood, were very sophisticated. Well, that's the Old Testament. That's so old. I've actually heard some people say, well, you know, we don't really know what that means. Come on. Let's look at Luke then, chapter 17. And as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. So who made that statement? Jesus made that statement, right? Okay, the flood is confirmed at least another five times in the New Testament. This one's by Jesus himself. That's important. So let's move up to Genesis chapter 9, speaking of Jesus. And I will establish my covenant with you. Has Jesus established a covenant with us? Yes. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. Yes, God has made that covenant to all of us. The question is, have you made a covenant with God? Well, let's talk about the flood. What we'll do is we'll talk about the what, when, where why and hows, okay? Well, the what? It was a flood. Genesis 6, verse 17 says, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth. Next question is, when? Well, if you go through genealogies, around 1650, 1660 would be the year. That's how many years after Noah was created. Just go through the genealogies. How about the where? Well, that's pretty obvious. All over the earth. Okay. And how about the why? Well, it was because of man's wickedness. Genesis chapter 6, verse 5 says, and God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth. He says that twice. How? Well, that will be the primary discussion here today. But first and foremost, Genesis 6, verse 17. Let's read that again. I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth. So the bottom line of the how question is this was a miracle. God did this. It didn't happen by accident. It didn't happen by natural causes. All we can do at this point is look and see what are the evidences that we see on the earth that would suggest the how, okay, that would point to how it happened. In other words, when looking at the evidences, is there something here that can describe the processes that took place back then? Not trying to explain away God's miracle, just trying to see what were the processes that probably happened here. Well, the first thing that you see is you see, and we've talked about this before, huge strata all over the earth. Stratas, rock strata, pancake layers that cover entire continents, multiple ones. So there's no question that the earth was completely flooded by water, number one. Number two is it had to have been extremely catastrophic in order for these sediments to be laid down all over entire continents. Must have moved very rapidly to cover an entire continent. Okay, so let's look at several ideas here. Idea number one, it was a special creation. Genesis 2, verse 5, the Lord had not caused it to rain upon the earth. Genesis 6, 17, I will bring the floodwaters. So it's quite possible that God just simply did it. And that's perfectly fine. If that's what happened, I'm good with that. However, when you look at the catastrophic nature of what happened during the flood, there must have been a whole lot more to it than just this. Idea number two. It's called a water canopy. Remember back in Genesis 1, verse 7, it says, God made the firmament and divided the waters which are under the firmament from the waters which are above the firmament. Okay, some people think that this was a water canopy. That's possible. If that's, and then this canopy broke down, and that's what caused the flood. Well, that is possible. I mean, God could have done it that way, but if you look at the physics today, if there was that much water in the atmosphere, we would all be crushed under its weight. Plus, once again, that does not explain the catastrophic nature that the evidence shows that the flood had. So that word canopy, we try not to use that when we're talking about the flood now, because it refers to a technical idea that has the technical aspects simply don't apply. Idea number three, the fountains. In Genesis 7, verse 11 says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, in the seventh day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the deep, of the great deep, broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. Okay, so this suggests two things that are going on. One is the fountains of the great deep, and two is the windows of heaven. So the idea here is that the water was mostly groundwater, and all this groundwater shot up into the air, caused it to rain, and that's what covered the earth. Now, the problem with that is if there's all these voids from the groundwater, the water would just run right back down into the voids. So, but, you know, people stuck to that idea for quite some time. That's the fountain's idea. Idea number four, we call the hydroplate idea. And here is where they focus on these fountains. Once again, we have the fountains of the deep, so have water, enormous water rushing up from underneath, and then the windows of heaven, the rain from the heavens falling. Well, what is the hydroplate idea? And this became extremely popular. But think about the earth as a sphere. Now think about on top of that sphere is about 3,500 feet of water and the entire sphere. Well, where did man live? Well, according to the hydroplate idea, there was granite. That's a rock, basically, that was supported by pillars. And so all of this 3,500 feet of water was under this granite that was supported by pillars. So maybe if it would help to visualize this, think about Roman arches, okay? And so underground are the arches all over, you know, everywhere underground. And in those arches or under those arches would be all of this water. And the idea is that the granite suddenly just all collapsed. And that's what caused the flood. Well, that easily explains the sedimentary rock all over the world. However, the bases for these arches should still be there, if that's the case, and they're not. Plus, the mathematical model would for granite, it kind of defies conventional rock mechanics. So this one has several problems as well. But just like any of these others, and all of them, if God wanted to do it that way, it's okay with me. But I've never been a fan of this idea either, primarily because it defies rock mechanics. Now, the people that do follow this, they have, I mentioned that it explains the sedimentary rock all over the world. It also explains other things, so I don't want to, you know, minimize it. But let's move on to idea number five. This one was developed in early 1990s. Let's think about Genesis chapter 1, verse 9 for a moment. What does it say? And what does the Bible say here? It says, "And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear." Let what appear? The dry land. So how did we get, scientific perspective, how did we get from one dry land? Now think about your globe and think about the different continents and the different oceans. How did we get from Genesis 1 verse 9 to what we have today? Well, the key here is thinking in terms of Genesis chapter 7 verse 11, thinking in terms of the fountains of the great deep, not water, but volcanic type activity. We're talking about the earth melting. Nahum, referring to the flood, refers to the earth the mountains quaking and the hills melting. The earth was burned at the presence. Okay, Psalm 46, referring to the flood, indicates the earth melted. So what if we think about all of the continents back together in one place? We'll call it a Pangaea, if you will. What if the continents broke? What would happen? Well, there's a fellow by the name of Dr. Baumgartner who worked for Los Alamos National Laboratory, and he had an idea. His job was to monitor the entire Earth. The entire Earth was in a computer almost like in pixel form. Each pixel was a different spot, and his job was to monitor the plates for the purpose of predicting when volcanoes and earthquakes would happen. So he had a massive computer program that would do this. So what he did was in his computer program, he put the entire Earth back together in one in a Pangaea-like form. He cracked, made the cracks about where the plates are today, and let's see what happens. After a long time, it got the computer was quite boring. Things didn't happen for very long, and then all of a sudden, things really changed. This is basically it ended up with the plates all where they are today. This is not a new idea. A fellow by the name of Antonio Snyder actually proposed this in 1859. Now, before we move too far along, I am one who is not very confident of computer modeling to do this sort of thing, because the way people do it is they take a presumed past configuration and a known current configuration, and then they develop their model to get from the past to the current. Well, all that means is that you're a good programmer. That's not what Dr. Baumgartner did at all. We have a presumed past. What he did was he took the universally accepted model for how things move around, how the plates move around on the Earth. He started this process and let the model itself come up with an end result. The end result was remarkably similar to what we have today. That's what made it so different. Okay, so what actually happened? When you break the plates, he started what is referred to as subduction. The oceanic plates, which is the plates under the ocean, are slightly denser than the continental plates. Those are the plates that hold up the Earth part, okay? So that's the reason that the oceans, the floor of the ocean is lower than the continental. Okay, so what he did is started a process called subduction, where the oceanic plates would actually start to slide down in under the continental plates. Imagine the magma and the volcanic type of activity when this is all taking place. This subduction was started all around the Earth with all of the continents. Imagine the heat and the steam produced in these oceans. That would cause incredible rain. With all of that steam going up into the sky, incredible rain. So, as I said, the computer program started off kind of slow. He thought it was kind of boring because initially things, almost nothing moved. Or it moved just so slowly, he didn't think anything was going to happen. But with time, because the plates are moving at all, that generates heat because of the friction, right? Well, that decreases the viscosity of the mantle. That decreased viscosity increases the plate velocity. Do you catch that? Due to friction, the heat decreases the viscosity. The lower viscosity increases the plate velocity. So we basically have runaway subduction. It would actually move, according to the model, potentially these plates could have moved as fast as 10 feet per second. This would also imagine the crunching up of the continental plates because of the of these motions pushing up against each other. And what it would also do is it would suck the continental plates downward. Think about that. So all of the land would be sucked downward, and the oceanic plates, that's the floor of the oceans, would have been elevated. So think about that. If all the land masses were lowered and the oceans were raised. Oh my, uh-oh. Think about the horizontal flooding, the tsunamis, right after another. The waters would rush across the continents. And that's exactly what you see with the sedimentary rock today. Similarly, or I should say at the same time, because of all of this lateral motion and pushing of continents up against each other and pushing and stretching and whatever, when you look at the mountains, you see huge mountains of all different shapes. But as you look at the strata within the mountains, you see how this folding and ripples and these pancake layers are very bent. They're uniformly bent, and they're all bent together. And that this whole idea would cause that exactly that to happen. The ocean trenches would be where they currently are. The mid-ocean ridges would be currently where they are. You've heard possibly that the magnetic fields have changed, have fluctuated back and forth. Well, this mantle convection current, because of the subduction, would cause the magnetic fields in rocks to flip-flop back and forth. So it would explain that. It also explains the rim of fire, or the ring of fire. Different people call it different things, ring of fire or rim of fire, which is the active volcanoes and most active volcano and earthquakes around the world, which is around the Pacific, the edges of the Pacific Ocean. When the program eventually, this model slowed down, the continents all ended up pretty much where they are today. The mountains ended up pretty much where they are today. This would explain marine fossils and ocean sediments on every mountain. That would explain where the strata, these pancakes of rock, would be flipped completely upside down. You see cuttings in rocks and canyons and whatnot, where there's some of the strata is vertical. Sometimes it's completely flipped upside down. It would explain the igneous bedrock sandwiched between sandstone. It would cause the ice age. It would cause rapid cave formation. It would cause very rapid stalactite and stalagmite formation. But one of the things that scientists wanted to investigate is, okay, let's make a prediction. If this model is true, then what you should see is basically cold mantle rock. When you look at the mantle's temperatures, you should see areas where the mantle temperatures are colder than the surrounding mantle. That's where this subducted oceanic plate would have been, because the subducted plate would have been colder than what the mantle was underneath it. So if that mantle was sucked down, or excuse me, if that oceanic plate is sucked down into the mantle, and it was only a few thousand years ago, you should see evidence of that cold rock being inserted or buried in that mantle. Well, sure enough, seismic tomography indicates that that's exactly what you see in various areas around the Earth where it would have been expected. Amazing. Okay, well, it's just amazing evidence, and I've been through that very quickly. There's just tons of evidence that shows that number five, the subduction around the Earth is very likely to be what happened. But let's have some critical thinking here. We talked about special creation of the water. We talked about the water vapor canopy. Talked about the fountains, the water coming up out of the earth. Talked about the hydroplate theory. We talked about this plate tectonics theory. Are these facts, theories? No, these are ideas. There's no way to actually put these in a laboratory and investigate them, right? Okay, so if I were to tell you that this is what happened, that would not be science. That would be indoctrination. I'm simply saying that number five happens to fit the evidence that we see around us the best of all of the five ideas. So, what do the secular people say when they look around the earth and they see all this catastrophic evidence around the earth? What they believe is that Earth must be very fragile. and we have to protect it forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Okay, for billions of years. When you look at the evidence from the flood, they figure the earth must be very fragile. The environment must be very fragile. However, none of the evidence supports that. All of the evidence appears that the environment is extremely stable. But they look at the history and saying it must be fragile. That's the secular ideas. Well, what does the Bible say? Well, the Bible indicates that God is sovereign, he is just, and he is our judge, right? He is in control forever and ever and ever and forever, right? Luke 17, once again, and as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them. Does that sound like the people of today? Matthew 27 says, and behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent. The rocks broke, right? Matthew 28, verse 2, and behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat upon it. What are we referring to here? We're referring to judgment. We're referring to salvation via Christ alone. So what should we be thinking when we think about the flood? The question is, are you ready for what is inevitable? Are you ready for another judgment? Whether it be judgment on the entire world at that time, at one time, or individually. Are you ready? Father, let's pray. Father, you tell us in your word over and over again that you are our creator. You tell us that you are sovereign, that you are our judge. Father, all too many people on this earth believe that they are sovereign, and they are their own judge. Father, please help us to spread the word that our salvation can only be through Jesus Christ. Help us individually to check and look at ourselves and say, am I sold out to Christ or not? Thank you, Lord Jesus, for these reminders. Amen. And once again, this Bible series is brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools. This is Jay Oxt of the Institute for Scientific and Biblical Research.
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey, helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
'Cause the greatest gift the Father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.